I greet you tonight in the name of Jesus, our Lord and Savior. I also bring you greetings from the congregation of Keysville. So tonight, the topic assigned to me is a purse with holes. And I don't know what comes to your mind when you think about a purse with holes, but I before I was given this assignment, I had figured it out about, probably a month before that, this verse was in the Bible. This is kind of a new one to me. And the more you think about it, the more you read it, the more there's there to understand. So you go to the Bible with me tonight, to Haggai chapter 1, where this verse is found. Haggai is in the Minor Prophets. It's not a very big book. Haggai chapter 1, I'm going to begin reading in verse 1. I'm going to read through verse 15 to get a context of what's happening here in this chapter. In the second year of Darius, the king, in the sixth month, in the first day of the month, came the word of the Lord by Haggai, the prophet, to Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, governor of Judah, and to Joshua, the son of Jozadak, the high priest, saying, Thus speaketh the Lord of the hosts, saying, This people say, The time has not come, the time that the Lord's house should be built. Then came the word of the Lord by Haggai, the prophet, saying, Is it time for you, O ye, to dwell in your sealed houses, and this house lie waste? Now therefore, thus saith the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. Ye have sown much, and bring in little. You eat, but you have not enough. Ye drink, but are not filled with drink. Ye clothe you, but there is none warm. And he that earneth wages to put it in a bag with holes. And thus saith the Lord of hosts, Consider your ways, go ye up to the mountain, and bring wood, and build the house, and I will take pleasure in it, and I will be glorified, saith the Lord. Ye looked for much, and lo, it came to little, and when ye brought it home, I did blow upon it. Why, saith the Lord of hosts? Because of my house that is waste, and ye run every man to his own house. Therefore the heaven over you is stayed from dew, and the earth is stayed from her fruit. And I called for a drought upon the land, and upon the mountains, and upon the corn, and upon the new wine, and upon the oil, and upon that which the ground bringeth forth unto men, and unto cattle, and on all the labor of the hands. Then Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, and Joshua, the son of Jozadak, the high priest, with all the remnant of the people, obeyed the voice of the Lord their God, and the word of Haggai the prophet, and the Lord their God has sent him. As the Lord their God had sent him, and the people did fear before the Lord. Then spake Haggai, the Lord's messenger, in the Lord's message unto the people, saying, I am with you, saith the Lord. And the Lord stirred up the spirit of Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, the governor of Judah, and the spirit of Joshua, the son of Jozadak, the high priest, and the spirit of all the remnant of the people. And they came and did work in the house of the Lord of hosts, their God, in the 24th day, in the sixth month, the second year of Darius the king. So we have people that was commanded to go build the house of God. Now, if you look at the context of this, this is 16 years approximately after the Jews had come back from Babylon. So we know that we can read in Ezra chapter 4 and Ezra 3 and 4 that the Jews come back and they started building. And they built the foundation, and they built this piece. And it says, I think it's the end of Ezra. Ezra chapter 3, it says, they laid the foundation, and they rejoiced because the foundation of the house of God was built. They were making progress. And this is the generation that had seen oppression. They were captives in a foreign land. And they were given great mercy to come back to their homeland. And they started. But as it is in their day, same way it is today, you know, the people of the land didn't like what was happening, and they started opposing it. And they first asked to join them so they could destroy them from the inside, and that didn't work. They said, no, this is only for the work of the Jews to do. And then the people took the opportunity to get the political leaders involved, and they wrote letters to the king. And eventually the king of Syria sent a letter back and said, the work's got to cease. What needs to happen. It's just going to cease. And you're going to listen. And the people said, okay, we can't work no more. So they stopped. And there sat the house. And the people got busy. There's other things to do, you know? So, in the course of 16 years, 15 to 16 years went past. And there was people that were vigorous and people that were energetic and make things happen. They were told to stop, so they just took a step back. And it continued to grow. It continued to go. And they got busy with their own stuff. And it says here in Haggai that they built their own houses nice. And in the course of 15 years, what happens? And in the course of 15 years, the 5-year-old that's beside of you is now 20. The 15-year-old that you're working with is now 30. 15 years have passed. The generation has almost shifted. And no, the 5-year-old didn't get much. But the 15-year-old saw what happened. And this work that was important to the people when they got there, suddenly it wasn't as important anymore. So there's a new generation rising. A new generation rose up. A new generation had priorities and had focuses other than finishing the house of God, which was the center of their worship. We don't put as much emphasis on the temple today. We worship God, and we worship God in truth in our hearts. And so our churches aren't necessarily monuments to God. But you know, there's a lot of parallels we can draw here. What are we doing? And God told them, you know, the younger generation that lived, and they saw what their dad's opinions was as they grew up. You know, 15-year-old knows what dad thinks. And the 10-year-old, when he's 15 and 18, he knows what dad thinks too. And he knows where dad's priorities are. And 15 years later, they're the ones making decisions. They're the ones that are going to decide what's going to happen. This house of God that was precious to the previous generation was destroyed by the enemy, and the younger people was okay with leaving it that way. They were okay with leaving it in shambles because it was going to cost them a lot of money and the work. It was going to take a lot of work, and there's other things to do, and they're busy. You know, it's people, they're the same as what we are today. I don't know, maybe y'all are sitting around twiddling your thumb looking for something to do. The rest of, a lot of people, they don't try and say what they got, what they're going to do, because there's always 3 more options. And, you know, someone else can go do it. But they had considered themselves, they were now in control. It was their cattle, it was their time, it was their money, it was their work, their success, their loss. We owned this thing. It was up to them to do it because, you know, they got stuff to get done. But they had forgotten what God had told them regarding their wealth even before they were in the land of Canaan back in Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy chapter 8, verses 10, it says, this is Moses speaking to the people before they entered into Canaan. Moses told him, he said, when thou hast eaten and art full, then shalt thou bless the Lord thy God for the good land which he hath given thee. Beware that thou forget not the Lord thy God in not keeping his commandments and his judgments and his statutes which I command thee this day. Lest when thou art eaten and art full and hast built goodly houses and dwelt therein, and when thy herds and thy flocks multiply, and thy silver and thy gold is multiplied, and all that thou hast is multiplied, then thine heart be lifted up, and thou forget the Lord thy God which brought thee forth out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage, who led thee through that great and terrible wilderness wherein there were fiery serpents and scorpions and drought, where there is no water, who brought thee forth water out of the rock of flint, and who fed thee in the wilderness with manna, which our fathers knew not, that he might humble thee, and that he might prove thee and to do thee good in the latter end. And thou sayest in thy heart, my power and the might of mine hand hath gotten me this wealth. But thou shalt remember the Lord thy God, for it is he that giveth thee power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant, which he sware unto thy fathers as it is this day. And it shall be, if thou do at all forget the Lord thy God, and walk after other gods, and serve them, and worship them, I testify against you this day that ye shall surely perish. As the nations which the Lord destroyed before your face, so shall ye perish, because you would not be obedient unto the voice of the Lord your God. And this was a long time ago. And they had just come out of captivity that was results of this. Because they grew up in themselves and got fat in themselves and said, it's a me. And the Lord judged them for that. But they still didn't remember. So where are we at today? How do we look at this today? Do we face the same pressures? What is my generation? And I say this personally because I feel like I'm a young man, but there's people younger than me and there's people older than me, so somehow you kind of hit the middle. Yeah, I think we all fit that somewhere. But what is my generation doing? And what am I doing? Am I willing to, that is going to preserve the focus of God in our lives? Is the optional list in my life getting smaller and the standard requirements accelerating it to the point where I feel like there's nothing left for God? Are we like Haggai told the people of Israel that the money was being placed into a bag with holes? So how can I combat this in my generation? And how can I be an example to those behind me? These are questions I want to look at tonight and think about. Because until we look at this chapter, until we look at this message and apply it to ourselves, it does nothing. Because we're here to live. We live in the spirit. We live in the world now. And we're also faced with the same pressures. People didn't change much, even though it's been a couple thousand years. So number one, how do I combat this? First and foremost in our life, it's important to remember that God owns all things. Psalms chapter 24, verse 1 says, "The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the world and all that dwell therein." God is the giver and sustainer of life. And many times, it's just like God told the Israelites back in the day, he says, "Remember, don't forget me." And so many times in life, we begin to think life's about ourselves. And in America, in the consumerist society we live, it's what can I have for myself? It's mine. Don't touch it. And you know, the saying is that some of the biggest things that split up Mennonites is whenever we talk to people about their children or their money. And what does it say about us? It's mine. I don't want no one to talk about it. So this is kind of a touchy subject. But God is the giver, sustainer of life. Everything we have, he gives the power. He has the power to give or to hold back. You know, it's not because of something I did. It's because God allowed me to. God is the one that chose to place you in America in 2026 in Lebanon County or wherever you're from. God placed you there. You could have been born in the deserts of South Africa. And to be a white man down there is not a plan. God chose that. We didn't choose that. God is the one that gave you parents and training. The community. He allows us to live in a land of freedom, a freedom of religion, or freedom of enterprise. It's goodness of God. And until we recognize we're willing to give praise back to God for what he gives to us, we're in a dire strait to give him anything. God is the one that gives us sound minds and healthy bodies. He's the one that blesses our crops. You know, we plant seeds and you expect the seed to come up. And if you put the right fertilizer down, and I guess now you just go buy an irrigator and hope the well don't run dry. Or if it does, you drill another one. But God's the one that makes the increase happen. You know, everything we have, he's the one. God is the one that moves your customers to purchase from you or purchase from the company you work for. You know, get away from this agricultural society. Sometimes I think that we don't remember how connected and how dependent we are of God. You know, the farmers know what growing seasons are. The crops don't grow, it's bad. But with in business, sometimes you think, well, maybe I didn't advertise right. But can't we put this back to God? God is the one that blesses your labors. And many times, the credit for business success goes to business seminars or special techniques or some other really advice, or sometimes they're tempted to say, man, if they don't do like I did, it'd probably work out for them. Is that where we are? Or can we humble ourselves far enough and recognize that the only thing I have is God? God is the one that gave the opportunity I have. God is also the distributor of his goods. You can look at the parable of the talents in Matthew chapter 25. Turn with me there. I want to read a story. We probably know the story by heart, but I just want to look at it here. Matthew chapter 25, begin reading in verse 14. In chapter 25, verse 14, "For the kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into a far country who called his own servants and delivered unto them his goods. And he gave, and unto one he gave five talents, and another two, and to another one, and every man according to his several ability, and straightway took his journey. Then he that received five talents went and traded with the same and made them other five talents. And likewise he that hath received two, he also gained another two. But he that received one went and digged in the earth and hid his Lord's money. After a long time, the Lord of those servants cometh and reckoneth with them. And so he that hath received five talents came and brought another five talents, saying, Lord, Thou deliverest unto me 5 talents. Behold, I have gained beside them 5 talents more. And the Lord said unto him, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of thy Lord. He also that hath received 2 talents came and said, Lord, thou deliverest unto me 2 talents. Behold, I have gained another 2 besides them. And the Lord said unto him, well done, good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of the Lord. And when he that received the 1 talent came and said, Lord, I knew that thou art a hard man, reaping where thou hast not sown and gathering where thou hast not strawed. But I was afraid and went and hid that talent in the earth. And lo, there hast that which is thine. And the Lord answered and said unto him, thou wicked and slothful servant, thou knewest that I reap where I sowed not, and gathereth where I have not strawed. Thou oughtest therefore to have put my money to the exchangers, and then at my coming thou shouldest receive mine with usury. Take therefore the talent from him, and give it to him that hath 10 talents, for it unto every one that hath shall be given, and he shall have abundance. But from him that hath not shall be taken away even that which he hath. And cast ye the unprofitable servant into outer darkness, and there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. You know, God is the one that took these talents he had, and he distributed them. He gave 1 man 5, and 1 man 2, and 1 man 1. And these men looked at these men, could have sat there and looked around and said, now, why in the world did it happen? I only got 1. I guess that's what the man said. Or I only got 2. He got 5. This isn't fair. I can't work with this. God's the ruler. It's God's decision. I didn't choose. But each man was responsible for what they did with what they were given. The man with 2 talents was not responsible for 5 talents. He was responsible for 2 talents. That's all he had. That's what he was given. That's where we are today. You know, we recognize God as the giver of everything. God is the distributor of everything in life. We can allow God to give me, and I accept. And I'm responsible for what I have. In this chapter, it says there's no instruction given, but the king gave him the money, and he straightway took his journey and left. And 2 of them got busy, and 1 of them didn't. But the king returned. When the king returned, he still owned everything. Everything was still God's. And every man was responsible to show what he did with what he had. You know, there's responsibility involved there. And each man was responsible for his own, not the other person's. And so as we think about tonight, as we think about a purse with holes or a bag with holes, you know, we have been given in America way more than most of the world. You know, it's easy to look around and say, I'm pretty sure I only have 1 talent. Because we all compare ourselves to someone up and down the line. But if you look at world records, the medium world income amount, the middle line is $2,900 a year. That's not much. If you have a net worth of greater than $75,000 or make $100,000 or more a year, you're in the top 10% of the world income levels. Top 10%, 1% out of 10 in the world is you. If you make more than $53,000 a year, or $53,000 or more annually, you're in the top 50% of the U.S. That's 1 out of 2. There's numbers I come up with. It's different statistics, maybe a little bit different, but you get the idea. You get the idea. We are richly blessed. Most among here have been given at least 5 talents. So what are we doing with it? Are we looking around? We will be judged with what we are doing with the opportunities you are given. And are we taking this incredible opportunities we have, and are we being just stewards of it? And working for the kingdom and making sure that we have to give back to God? Or are we taking what we have, wrapping it in a napkin, and say, wow, if only I'd be given more. This isn't a plan. I can't do it. I mean, I need all this for myself. Number 2, without the same you see from Haggai, is God requires money. God requires support from money from the man back from men for his kingdom. And we say, why is it about money? Well, unfortunately, that's the medium by which we buy and sell and trade. That's the medium we work with. It's money. God had brought these men out of captivity. He placed them back in this fruitful land. And it must have been nice, because it says they dwelt in sealed houses, which means they had ceilings and coverings, and they were more than just basic. They were nice houses. And God challenged them. He says, "Why are you dwelling in sealed houses and my house lies in ruin? Why are you doing that? There's work to be done. We don't just take everything we have and consume it upon ourselves. God needs it back." Malachi verses 3 says the same thing, or similar words. Malachi chapter 3 verses 6 to 12. "For I am the Lord, I change not. Therefore, ye sons of Jacob are not consumed. Even from the days of your fathers are you gone away from mine ordinances, have not kept them. Return unto me, and I will return unto you, saith the Lord of hosts. But ye said, wherein shall we return? Will a man rob God? Yet ye robbed me. But ye say, wherein have we robbed thee? In tithes and offerings. Ye are cursed with a curse, for you have robbed me, even this whole nation. Bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be meat in mine house. And prove me now herewith, saith the Lord of hosts, and I will, if I will not open unto you the windows of heavens and pour out you a blessing, there shall not be room enough to receive it. And I will rebuke the devourers for your sakes, and he shall not destroy the fruit of your ground. Neither shall your vine cast her fruit before the time of the field, saith the Lord of hosts. And all nations shall call you blessed, and ye shall be a delightsome land, saith the Lord of hosts." There is a direct connection. In this chapter, we see it in 2 Corinthians also. But there is in 2 Corinthians chapter 9. But there is a direct connection between giving to God willingly and receiving a blessing. Now, we get scared and we don't want to preach the health and wealth gospel. And we can't take the mentality that I'm going to give this so I get. Giving to God does not guarantee abundance. But refusing to give to God is going to bring trouble in your life. And I don't know what all that looks like. But it happened in Haggai, it happened in Malachi. That these people, God said, "I'm against yourself. You know, the bag with holes, they were putting it in." He said, "It's just getting away from you. The money is getting away from you." Because he said, "You're wanting to bring in a lot, but you can't. I'm blowing upon it when you get it home. And I'm taking it from you because you're leaving. You're not putting your priorities straight." And Malachi says the same thing. It says, he says, if you would give to me first, I will rebuke the devourer for your sakes, and he shall not destroy your fruits. So there's a direct correlation between giving and God sustaining and blessing. And this goes way back. It's consistent. It's consistent with the sacrifice system, the sacrificial system, and the feast of the Old Testament. God required the best of the flock. He required the first fruits. He required the first of the field. God wanted what was best, and he wanted 10%. It was a requirement, the tithing thing. Jesus also taught in his parable that the man who scorned the opportunity and scorned what he was given, he lost that yet too. So there's some connection between not giving back and even losing what you have. I don't want to take that too far, but that's what the Bible says. There's something there that we need to take to heart and think about. The other thing that's important to remember is in this, giving to God requires faith. You know, in Haggai and Malachi both, and Haggai says, "Go up into the mountains and do this." And in Malachi says, "Try me and see. You give to me, and I'm going to bless you that you ain't going to receive what I give you." So when we give to God, we don't give to God in the essence of wait and see. If I have enough left over, he might get some. We give to God first. We give to God in faith because God is the one that's going to contribute back. Sometimes when we think we're going to bargain with God, maybe you have a higher opinion of yourself. I know where this man is, and that is we're pretty fickle. God is an absolute. And if we tell God, if we think we're going to bargain with God, if you give me enough, I'll give some back. You know, God's the only absolute there is in life. We as men are fickle beings. If we start down that path, we will never have enough because we're not absolutes. We will not remember what we promised. So how do we bring this together? How do I bless God with my goods? The first thing that's important that we do in life, and this is take an inward look of ourselves. I think we need to identify our sealed houses. You know, God called these people to come out. He says, you're dwelling in sealed houses. And my house is laying in waste. And so many times we can look around outside of my house. I mean, I don't live in a sealed house. I live in an humble dwelling. Of course I do. I mean, someone else has a lot more than I do. But is it important that we don't look up and down the bench? We look at ourselves and think about what's my sealed house? What am I wanting to make? What am I endeavoring to maintain that is robbing God and leaving something God wants in waste? It's important that we live inside our means. We as a people tend to raise our standard of living like the Jews to the point that we begin to feel that everything we bring home is needed to sustain my lifestyle. I mean, my neighbor has it. I should too. And it's expensive after a while. And this mentality can affect each generation. And it actually ends up accelerating because you have people, you know, you have a church, you have older people and you have younger people. And there is a spread. And you know, some people work till they're 50 and then they might purchase something. Maybe they'll fix their house up. Maybe they'll do something. I'm not saying that's right or wrong. It's something to think about. But then you have people that look at that, and they're 25, and they're broke, and they try to keep up, and it makes them more broke. And it's not a plan. But some of that is how my generation is treating things. Because if I'm instilling into my children that you got to keep up and it better be nice, they have a very high floor they got to attain to. And no, they won't have enough. They won't have enough for God. The responsibility to provide for the church needs to continue to be passed down to the next generation as fathers, young fathers, old fathers, wherever you are. As fathers, it's important to instill in your children, instill in your sons especially, and your daughters too, the importance of giving. Because what we have, and it's pretty easy to, I was younger one day too, and it's pretty easy to think about, you know, I don't have much, and I know someone else that probably has a whole lot more than I do, and if he would just give, then, you know, I can keep on working. God bless you if you never thought that thought. But until we as fathers can push our sons to beyond that, the generation that's going to embrace the bills of the church or the responsibilities of the church buildings, the schools, the medical support, the generation that's going to support that is the young generation. And if we always look to the older generation, there's always going to be someone older than you until you're the fifth, the oldest person in the church. And then there's less. So if we don't want to accept the responsibility now and take the responsibilities that's there and identify as a personal responsibility, then now I might not have as much as somebody else, but I have enough to give. It's important that we have that. The easy credit and lack of accountability causes people to become overburdened with debt just to live. The consumables goods debt snowballs. And we just put it on a credit card. And after a while, you feel like you have a purse with holes because everything you shove in is losing faster than you're putting it in. And it gets bigger and bigger. And what am I going to do? And we can't identify our unsealed houses because, well, we have a lot of things we want. And someone else has bought it. In America today, I believe we have more options than there ever has been before. And it takes wisdom to navigate it. My wife and I are attempting to build a house. And there's a lot of options. There's a lot of choices. And you just, where do you start and where do you stop? What do you do? What's right and what's wrong? Do you do it because you can afford it? Do you look at it and say, well, it doesn't cost much more over 15 years? Or do you look at it and say, and we're taught frugality. We're taught to make wise decisions and buy quality. And there's good things about that. But how far do we take it? At what point do we say that's enough and I'm going to stop? Vehicle options. You buy a vehicle, you can do anything with it. The aftermarket truck, industry is about a $3 billion industry. You know, what kind of rims you put on, whether you lift it or lower it or darken the headlights or the exhaust or chip it or tune it or whatever it is. There's options, endless options you can have. And we as America, too many times we fall prey to this because of the endless bombardment of advertisement that we see. And in our plain circles and in our groups of people we rub shoulders with, someone else hides it. And to maintain the level of cool, whatever, wherever it may be, everyone has something there to look at. And to maintain that gets expensive. And we begin to think, well, I just got to have it. There's nothing left over for God. Nothing left over from God. The loss of community and the mutual aid plan, the push for full insurance, it's out there. Insure yourself. Guarantee yourself. No loss. I think about a Furl would have had full coverage on his vehicle. He could have been back up and gone the next week. Well, can't we look at it and say that God works through life? God works through us? Maybe the loss sustained. Maybe we needed that. He learned. And the rest of us better learn. I hear sometimes a saying that relying on church don't work, and it bothers me. It doesn't work, are we sure? Is it because I live in a mentality of give me, give me, or is it a thing where it works both ways. We give, and we contribute to the brotherhood need. But the push of independence, take care of yourself, my stuff, and your stuff, and I don't care what you have, I don't want to have to pay for it. That's not giving to God. That's not bearing each other's burdens. So we give to God first. We give to God first by giving to the work of the kingdom and those in need. In the Old Testament and New Testament, God requires tithing. Deuteronomy chapter 14. It talks about what the tithings did. The tithes required of the Israelite nation was to support the Levites, to provide for the temple's needs and to distribute to the poor. And they were supposed to give 10%. They were supposed to give 10% of everything. 10% of their flocks, 10% of their crops, 10% of their seed, 10% of their meal, 10%, 10%, 10%. And then as the Pharisaical law took a hold of this thing, they stretched it out to, they just made it, it became a big, heavy burden. 10% of everything. And Jesus never really got rid of that. He condemned the Pharisees for making sure they got 10% of everything. But they ignored the weightier part of the law, and Jesus told them, he said, these weightier part of the law is what you should have done, not to leave the other undone. You know, it takes both. We obey God, and 10% is a minimum. In the Christian life, we give as needed. We give as the need is there. And it isn't always just stop at 10%. And we have ample opportunities today. We have ample opportunities today to tithe and support the work of the local church, our church general funds and building needs, our schools, our brotherhood assistants, and other charitable associations around. There's people in need, and we are richly blessed. We really are. Maybe we're not as richly blessed as what you think you are, but you are in the grand scheme of things, and there's always something to give. Because if we give first, God will provide the back. Just as the day in Haggai, I'm sure they could looked around and said someone else could have had more skill to build the wall. And I'm going to stay home and work. I mean, you know, someone else can do it. I'm busy. I got a lot of work to do. But we need to take personal responsibility and identity. when there's work to be done at church, when there's bills to pay, when there's things that need to happen. You know, it's pretty easy to say, well, someone else can do it. Congregation this size, you can look at that and say, well, I'm sure someone else can do that. I mean, they probably don't need me. But God placed you in this church for a reason. He does need you. And there's something you can do somewhere. No matter how big or how small, it doesn't matter. But there's work for all, and the burdens can be shared. We can always find reasons where it won't work for us to serve. And until we deliberately, intentionally begin to give the kingdom work, it probably won't happen. You know, I hear this argument sometimes, you should not keep track of how much you give. And I guess it can be both ways. I don't know. But I know my tendency, and that is that if I don't keep track of what I give, I usually don't give enough. Because, you know, when Sunday morning comes and you got ready to check out, you think about, well, this bill needs paid, and this here's coming up this week, and is everyone have enough at the end of the month? But when you start looking at it and keep track, and you start saying, you know what, but I didn't give enough. Lord needs more. It's important. I think it's important sometimes, not that we keep track so we say we gave enough now, but it's important that we keep track so we know we're giving enough. Because just like people, we all judge ourselves better than what we actually are. That falls in the giving category also. This affects everybody, whether they make $25,000 or $250,000. You give. There's something to give. Something, somewhere. Another thing we need to do, we need to start young. This needs to start young. Fathers, teach your children, teach your sons and daughters, your youth, to give. It's important. It can start. It's easy to fall in the rut and say, I'll give whenever I have more. But as I said earlier, you'll never have it. We'll never get enough to give if we take that attitude, if we take that mentality. And this is the same thing I believe it was said in Haggai's day, that whenever I have enough, I'll get. I mean, I'm working hard, and I'm trying to bring all this stuff together, and I'm trying to make it work. And God said, well, I'm blowing against it. I'm the one causing it to even leave what you have because you're not taking care of my stuff. So whenever we begin to say that I'll give when I have, we will see that we can use all we make, and it won't change. We will continue to use all we make, and we'll just get bigger and bigger. And what are we going to do? God blesses the giver. It's important to start young, and it's important to start, and even if you do just start small, because God blesses the giver. You know, Jesus said when he was looking at the offering basket there in the temple, the widow come through with two mites. The widow didn't have much. She had two mites. That's not much. And there was rich men there too. But the widow took what she had and she threw it in. And Jesus blessed that small amount because of what it meant to her to give. And he said that widow is more blessed than everyone throwing in of their abundance. So the little opportunities we have is important that we use to give back to God. So the other reason we start young is because the youth is the next generation. Someday, it will be your responsibility. What are you going to do about it? And you can look around and say, well, but I don't have all the opportunities, and name three people that have it. I don't have that. I mean, it's so expensive to live nowadays. Well, it was 30 years ago also. You know, young people make a lot of money. They can. They can make a lot of money. And what are you doing with it? What are we doing with it? Our brotherhood assistance will work as long as the youth, the younger generation, determine it's going to work. But if we said, I'm going to fend for myself and you fend for yours and we're going to be okay, It's going to end up hurting ourselves. If I understand, I've been told that the Weaverland Vehicle Aid Plan has not had an incident they could not cover, and it's been running since 1975. Is it because of their good management that their drivers all follow the lines on the road? Or is it God? Is it because of our good management the work you do, the building you built, whatever you did, didn't collapse? Is it all because you're good management? Sure, we're good stewards. Sure, we do things. You might do things right. But you know, God can work for us or God can work against us. And when God's working against us because we're not giving God what he owns, it will feel like everything we do is going out, is running out the hose of the purse. So we must deliberately make it a practice to give willingly. You know, it's a choice. We can give out of responsibility, we can give out of drudgery. But it is important that we give, and we give willingly. 2 Corinthians 9, verses 6 to 9 says, "But this I say, he that soweth sparingly shall also reap sparingly. And he which soweth bountifully shall also reap bountifully. Every man according as he purpose in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly, nor of necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver. And God is able to make all grace abound to you, that ye, having all sufficiency in all things, may be abound to every good work. As it is written, he hath dispersed abroad, he hath given to the poor, and his righteousness remaineth forever. Every man, according as he purposed in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly, or out of necessity. For God loveth the cheerful giver." And the only way we can give it back to God when he demands it of us is that we recognize, first off, it comes from God. And it's his rightfully thing. It's his rightful thing. The previous generation built what we have today. And it took many years to build it. And unless we're willing to own it and accept it and apply ourselves with a level of commitment to God, it's yours first, how long will it hold? Jesus says in Matthew 6, verses 19 to 21, Lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth, where moth and rust dust corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasure in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through nor steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. You know, when you give, you can give either time or money, and a lot of times it's related. If you don't give time, you probably won't give money. If you don't give money, if you just give money and don't give time, it's only going to go so far because your heart's not in it. But when we lay up treasure in heaven, and we lay up treasure and we give it back to God where it belongs, it says you lay it up on earth, you have moth and rust doth corrupt. So what are we doing with our stuff? Are we putting it in bags with holes of moth and rust? Or are we giving it to God who can do with it far abundantly and multiply it beyond more than I know? I just give it back to God because he gave it to me. God bless you.